time for another reading of The Lady in Gold, the extraordinary tale of Gustav Klimt's masterpiece, Portrait of Adele Blockbar. The author is Anne-Marie O'Connor, and we are reading the chapter called Adele's Final Destiny. We're at page 268. We're about 30 pages from the end of the book. Adele's Final Destiny. As the five Klimt paintings drew record-breaking crowds at a hastily arranged special exhibit at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, LACMA, potential buyers intensified their courtship, hoping to close a deal. Developer-turned-billionaire philanthropist Eli Broad was leading a bid by LACMA donors to acquire all five paintings for $150 million. The art writer Tyler Green reported in Fortune magazine. It was a very significant offer, a LACMA curator said. Our goal was to keep them all together. But valuations seemed to rise by the day as the LACMA show told the world the saga. Told the world the saga of loss and redemption. One afternoon, Maria sat on her burnt orange sofa, looking over monographs on the paintings sent by Christie's and Sotheby's. The most significant event in the art world since the World War itself, Maria read aloud. Shameless, she said, shaking her head with an amused smile. There was truth to the flattery. Restitution was putting on sale artistic masterpieces that otherwise would have been locked up as tight as Mona Lisa in the Louvre. The belated correction of Nazi dirty deals was spilling into a voracious art market willing to pay $100 million for a silly diamond-encrusted skull by Damien Hirst. These paintings were legends. They had a history. Hungry auction houses saw it coming. Ron Lauder, or Lauder, however you want to say it, had coveted the gold portrait of Adele for years. Now he needed it. He needed a destination painting, a reason for people to go to New Galerie. One morning, as I sat in her kitchen, Maria looked at her watch. Oh, my darling, I have to go to the hairdresser, she said. I'm seeing Ron Lauder. We're going to the peninsula. Lauder was also meeting with Steve Thomas, the art law specialist representing the heirs of the Klimts. In Vienna, the catalyst for this drama, Hubertus Zernin, was failing. I've lost so much weight, he mused. People say that I already look like death. He chuckled, as if in sad wonder, as the progressing evidence of his own mortality. His body ached so much he felt he no longer fit in it. He took so much morphine he was useless after 1 p.m. His physical decline felt surreal. I keep feeling as if someday I'll wake up and this will all turn out to be a strange dream, Zernin said. But now I'm sleeping 20 hours a day. When I wake up, it's still here. When his wife Valerie came home from her errands, Hubertus called her to his bedside to describe everything he could no longer see. The streetcars, the blooming chestnut trees, the children playing outside by the fountain, in the square where Tamino played Mozart's magic flute, his Pamina wrapped around him. Hubertus imagined it all. Life. On the eve of a dinner in his honor, Hubertus closed his eyes and let go. Austria had lost another fragile, eloquent troublemaker. A week later, Lauder announced that he had bought the gold portrait of Adele Blockbauer for a record $135 million. It was a sum greater than that year's funding for the National Endowment for the Arts. Klimt, once branded as a pornographer, then dismissed as too decorative, was now the creator of the world's most expensive painting. The LACMA offered to buy the rest of the paintings. the LACMA effort to buy the rest of the paintings had collapsed, it became clear that they were looking to get the greatest number of dollars they could, Eli Broad told Fortune. It's pretty hard to be resolutely philanthropic with a large group of people when there's that much money on the table, said the LACMA curator said of the five heirs. Nellie had agreed to the sale of the gold portrait of Adele, but she still had mixed feelings. She told Maria that taking Adele out of Vienna was like taking David out of Florence or the Mona Lisa out of Paris. She argued that both portraits of Adele should hang in a museum together. Days before the gold portrait was to be delivered to the New Gallery in New York, Nellie balked at paying Randall his 40% contingency fee. Randall filed a $40 million lawsuit against Nellie in the United States Court of the Central District of California in Los Angeles for refusing to compensate him for his investment of 8 years in highly speculative endeavor that had resulted in the most successful Nazi-looted art recovery litigation in the history of the United States, according to his court filing. Randall accused Nellie of unjust enrichment, saying she planned to collect a 25% share that could total more than $86 million from the sale of the Klimts, which Randall valued at more than $300 million without paying his fee. The other heirs, Maria Altman and Nellie's brother Francis Gutman, who would also get 25%, and George Bentley and Trevor Mantle, who would split the remaining 25%, were paying his fee, Randall said. But Nellie, he argued, was refusing to compensate his hard work and efforts in extremely high-risk litigation that was now going to put money in her pocket. He said Nellie's attorney, Bill Berardino, had said that Nellie did not sign the 40% contingency fee agreement. She was not bound by it, yet she was prepared to pay a fair fee. Nevertheless, Osberg had refused to pay a fair fee or any fee, Randall charged. Nellie caved. She agreed to pay Randall in full. I refused to pay because he was not my lawyer. My lawyer advised me to pay, Nellie would say later, offering no further explanation. Steve Thomas, the lawyer for the sale, said that the misunderstanding was resolved amicably between them outside of any courtroom and put behind them, and they quickly moved on. Adele was on the move again. The gold portrait was carefully packed in a crate that was bolted to an 18-wheel truck. A special high-security team drove for 3 days and three nights from Los Angeles, updating its position and stopping only to refuel. East 86th Street was sealed off by a special police cordon. Ron Lauder was anxiously pacing the pavement when the rig pulled in at midnight, July 5th. In many ways, this is what I believe Adele Blockbauer wanted for herself, had she lived to see this, Lauder said at the unveiling of the painting at the Neue Galerie a week later. Nellie sat in the audience. Randall's lawsuit had been formally dismissed just the day before. Now she silently watched as Lauder introduced Adele, a woman who believed in the value of art. Klimt realized this was a very, very special woman, and you can see how beautiful she looks, surrounded by gold, said Lauder. This is a painting of an obviously very emotional feeling toward Adele Blockbauer. Lauder recalled his awe when he first saw the painting as a teenager. It's not just a portrait, he said. It captures all the emotions, all of the spirit that was embodied in the turn of the century, Vienna. It represents everything that was Vienna at that time. You cannot find a more important piece of Austrian art than this painting. Now it had the cachet of history. Adele Blockbauer was one of the last prisoners of World War II, Lauder said. $135 million? You can't put a value on great works of art. This painting is priceless. When the press had gone, Nellie studied the gold portrait hung as Adele Blockbauer won. At the Belvedere, Adele had been one of many. Here, Adele dominated the room, the entire museum. To see all the paintings on public view was Nellie's wish. As the auction loomed, there was no guarantee. Nellie said she and Maria called Steve Thomas to suggest that they donate the second portrait of Adele to Ron Lauder and ask Lauder to pay Randall only what he might lose from his 40% on the proceeds of the sale of the painting. The proposal went nowhere. Nellie said she sent a message to the rest of the heirs about the possibility of an auction in which only museum directors would bid, keeping the paintings affordable enough for an acquisition and ensuring they would remain in public view. She said she got no reply. The other heirs declined to comment or said they had no recollection of this. Thomas said all decisions on the painting were made unanimously. Nellie said her only remaining option was to stridently oppose the other heirs, and she was not prepared for an unpleasant family fracas. That's the end of that chapter. We'll go on to the burden of history. Nellie mulled this over in Canada at a house perched above Vancouver Bay with a sweeping view of mountains, tidal pools, and seabirds. A tiny woman, Nellie was as watchful and wary as a deer, yet also direct. "I don't like the inference that my mother was raped," she said bluntly 5 minutes after we met. "We were saved from Auschwitz by a Croatian friend of hers. I still have the egg warmers she knitted." Her husband, Prince Johannes John Weichert Auersperg, had the elegant dark look, good looks of a much younger man. "Come here, Maggie. What are you doing? My cat's bugging me tonight." "Yes, what do you want?" "Lots of love." "Okay." She's purring, but she's also being a little pest. So, okay, here we go. He was describing the Auersperg family by dynasty, which traced in its roots to the 11th century Knights of Auersperg. I hope I'm saying that right. It's Auersperg. Auersperg. Of the Turjak Castle of Slovenia. His maternal great-grandfather, General Edward Klam Gallus, served with the legendary Field Marshals Josef Radetzky, immortalized in the elder Johann Strauss's Radetzky March. His maternal grandfather, Franz Klam Gallus, was a member of the entourage of Empress Elizabeth in England. The prince was describing the Czech family castle he visited as a child, a turreted 12th century marvel called Friedland, a magical castle where Goethe wrote legends and Schiller wrote poetry and where Beethoven carried on with a Klam Gallus bell. The prince was dwelling on the past, the romantic, distant past his generation loved to live in, not the recent past they hated even to visit. Not the recent past they hated to even visit. The Friedland Castle was in Germanic Czech Sudetenland, where Hitler had enjoyed his greatest support in all of the Reich, especially among some Germanic nobles whose Czech estates diminished by land reform of Ferdinand's friend, President Masaryk. The Auersperg name also appears among the nobles who joined the Nazi party in the wartime membership files in Berlin. Molly, Maggie, stop. No. You're bugging me. And I'm also bugged when my eyeglasses don't work right and when I feel like the names aren't coming out right. So sorry, I'm being a little bugged tonight in the reading. Let me move on. John came of age nearby in tiny Haindorf on the Polish border, a 13th century pilgrimage site with an onion-domed basilica, where some members of his generation recalled Hitler Youth as a kind of summer camp, hiking in the mountains and learning to sing harmony. He was 15 when his family was expelled from Czechoslovakia at the end of the war with the rest of the Sudeten Germans. The family was reportedly declared enemies of the people by the new communist local authorities. He left on foot. John didn't mention this era at all. Here in this idyllic setting, relatives joked Nellie and Prince Osberg had created a studiously serene, picture-perfect life inside the golden frame, a peaceful vision that shut out disturbing memories of the past. Nellie was soft-spoken and articulate with the intellectual range of a well-read woman with a classical education. She was discussing the evolution of gender roles and suggesting that the sexualized Klimt portrayals of women could be viewed as disrespectfully one-dimensional. I have a feeling Klimt was interested in Adele because she was a very fascinating person, Nellie was saying as she opened a collection of family letters and photographs. I see Adele as a very serious woman, trapped in wealth. She was a drawing-room socialist and bothered by her wealth, John remarked impassively. I would prefer Adele's portrait to be somewhere in the Belvedere, Nellie said vehemently. To this day, I don't know if we should have gotten the paintings. I couldn't make up my mind who is right. I didn't like Randy's way of going after it. He didn't seem to care about my opinion. He's going to make $96 million, John interjected blandly. If Randall gets $96 million over 8 years, he was paid $1 million a month. He raised his eyebrows. He took a huge chance, still a 40% fee. John believed the Klimt paintings belonged to Austria. John believed the Klimt paintings belonged in Austria. He held up the letter from Gustav Reinsch, written just after the war, to Maria's brother Robert. My ski holiday was wonderful, John read from Reinsch's jaunty introduction. According to Adele's will of 1923, she left the paintings to the Austrian gallery, he read. I have given them a declaration that the heirs of Blochbauer will fulfill her wish. Louise loved the Klimt paintings, Nellie said. If you ask, did you agree? Did she agree? I don't know, Louise always said. I wish Adele had deeded the other paintings and not the Klimts. My mother hated the Biedermeiers and sold them all. The Biedermeiers were campy pastorals of bosomy maidens and men in lederhosen. Hitler viewed them as exemplary Germanic culture. The fact that Louise and Adele gave the Klimts shows she agreed, the prince said. I'm giving Garzaroli, the authorization, John read, to receive the last Klimt paintings and instructions to please go and retrieve them. John looked up. With this, one cannot say it is looted, he said adamantly. There will be plaques, he read from the letter. No, there were no plaques, Nellie broke in hotly. People were very upset. Nellie sighed and shook her head. I never knew what was in Reinsch's mind when he wrote this letter, she said. The story was he was trying to soften up the authorities, but I didn't feel with all of this I could sue. It was tit for tat, her husband said. But wasn't this tit for tat, the quid pro quo deal of granting export permits for minor paintings to extract permission to hang on to the good ones, proof of Randall's contention that the deal violated the laws against using the lure of export permits to extort paintings? That was what the Austrian panel had concluded when they said Austria should give the paintings back. Nellie changed the subject. She opened her photo album to a picture of Ferdinand. I was the last one to see Ferdinand, she said, in January 1941 at the most expensive hotel in Zurich, the Billerive au Lac. I went down to look at the swans swimming in the lake. Her husband broke her reverie with a direct stare. The mistake was not that Louise stayed, he said carefully. The mistake was that she didn't leave in 1941. Nellie turned back to her album. Here was a sepia photo of handsome Victor in a World War I uniform, the heir to a Jewish dynasty of barons who threw New Year's Eve parties with gypsy musicians and sleigh rides in the snow. Victor and Louise were children of privilege. Nellie was a child of war. Nellie wanted to clear her father's name of the long-ago charge of collaboration. She pulled out a lock of her father's hair. "We thought the Nazis were gone and life would be great," Nellie said, shaking her head. "He was charged on a Thursday. The trial was Tuesday. The trial is ridiculous. We thought, this is a sham. They wanted to steal the lumber business again." "In the courtroom," they said, "some of the French Revolution types like you have exploited the working classes. You are a parasite to society." The main sin for which he was sentenced to death was he had caused the death of several hundred partisans, she said. He explained that since he was a Jew under Nazi government, he was unlikely to be able to arrange Nazi maneuvers. He was in jail in Zagreb with us at this time. "The charges were irrelevant," Nellie said disdainfully. "He was the kind of person you get rid of in a communist country. So Baron Gutmann, who barely escaped the Nazis, was shot by Tito's henchmen." "People are weak," Nellie said angrily. There are few heroes around." Her husband looked concerned, but soon the conversation returned to the paintings. She had proposed donating the second portrait of Adele to Lauder, or making it easy for him to buy it. The landscapes could be donated to museums, but all five heirs would have to agree. John started to say something else about Randall's fee. Nellie shot him a look. Nellie had other reasons for not wishing to dredge up the past, and they had nothing to do with the paintings or porcelain. After a dinner, she led me to a tiny alcove off the stairs. One wall was covered by a portrait of Maria's mother, Therese, in lush greens and blues. "Who was the artist?" Nellie shrugged. "No one remembers." What Nellie wanted to show me were framed pencil sketches of men in a big room, some playing checkers or reading. Others slept on the floor. The men were condemned to death. Nellie's father made those drawings in the prison cell, where Nellie spent her last night with him in 1946. "They weren't supposed to shoot him yet. The appeals were not exhausted," she said. Nellie paused, studying the drawings. "It was a very weird evening. I can't put it any other way," she said. "That's the only way to describe it. Weird. It wasn't sad. It was very confusing. Something you couldn't grasp. We talked about life and death. My father said, so many people have been shot in the last few years. What's one more? It's not that important. They came and woke me up. My father said goodbye to me. He was very peaceful. I walked out into the street, but it was like a dream, I thought. Oh my God, the world is carrying on as if nothing was happening. I wanted to stop people in the street and say, don't you know they are shooting my father? I don't think I will ever get over it," she said, her eyes shining with tears. "It's just part of me." On the way downstairs, Nellie paused before Klimt's languid drawings of Adele and a backlit cabin of Fernandez's 18th century teacups with cobalt and gold geometric designs that looked as contemporary as porcelain by Gianni Versace. "I'm the only one who didn't sell them," Nellie said. And that's the reading for today. And next reading will be art history. And we are at page 276. And I think art history will take the next reading. And then we'll have one more after that to finish the book, I think. Yeah. Longer one, it looks like, towards the end. And then we will be finished with The Lady in Gold. It's been quite interesting for me. I'm wondering now if I would go back and listen from the very beginning all the way through, how it would feel to listen in that way. But it's been fun reading this in chapters and chunks, and I hope that you're enjoying the listening. Take good care. Talk to you next time.